true practices and spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we're on step 11. And I'm going to turn the meeting over to Graham.
Hi, everyone. I'm Graham. I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the meeting tonight. We're getting near this run-through of the 12 steps, so we're doing step 11 tonight, and then 2 weeks on step 12, and then it'll be starting over. Anyway, David and I started this up after a lot of discussion. We started it up in his house, and a few months ago, really just in the summer, and the idea of what we wanted to do was just to try to transmit the simplicity of AA's steps, much like we would do when we were sponsoring a guy, and we'd sit down with him at Starbucks each week and just talk to him about the steps and discuss it with him and explain the instructions on how to take the steps. And we also wanted to apply them in our own lives as well on an ongoing basis. So we set that meeting up, and this is not out of a desire to teach anybody. We're not AA gurus or experts. There's people in the room that know a lot more about the literature than we do. We're not here to teach about the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We just simply want to share our experience, strength, and hope in the hope that it might help somebody. So we have come through the steps. Last week we did step 10, and like we said, we're going to be on step 11 tonight. So let's just get right down to it and start reading the book. So we're going to kick off on page 85, and just where it says step 11. Okay, so that's where we're going to start. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others? Of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. So, we're really talking about this 24-hour living, living one day at a time. And last week and in the previous weeks, we talked a lot about how, as an alcoholic, I really exist primarily in the past or in the future. You know, I spend a lot of time worrying about things that I did in the past and things that were done to me and thinking about them and mulling them over in my mind. And I also spend a lot of time afraid of what might happen in the future. Are they going to find out X, you know, fill in the blank? And when they find out, it's not going to be good for me, surely. You know, so that's really a lot of my thought life's caught up in that. And really what we're trying to do, or what it's suggesting that I try to do, is to really bring it into today. And not even today, but right now. And try to bring my consciousness, my awareness into this moment, as opposed to the past or the future. It talks about prayer and meditation. And if you're an atheist, like I was when I came to AA, that's a bit of a bummer. Prayer and meditation. Are you kidding me? So prayer to me, when I came to AA, prayer equals all those people at church that I hate. And it's just nonsense. Prayer, what are you talking about? Prayer. I laugh at people that pray. And then meditation, that's like one of those Buddhist dudes, right? You know, so maybe like I'll shave my head and get a robe and just go, yeah. You know? Maybe smoke a big one. Just to add to the experience. I mean, really, are you kidding me? Meditation. So, you know, that's where I'm coming to this from, just with my usual attitude, which is contempt, absolute contempt. This is nonsense. You people are weak fools. But it says that I can't be shy on that matter. So this is my experience with Step 11. My first sponsor, Greg, the first or second time that I met him, he cracked open the book at page 86 and he's like, I want you just to do what it says in here every single morning and night. Just start it now. And I know we haven't done step one through whatever yet, but just you get working on this right now. And I'm like, wow. And you know, he was like, I want you to pray on your knees. And I really had a problem with that. And I know I've told this before. This really did happen to me. I could not get down on my knees and pray. I just couldn't do it. And the reason I can't do it is because I'm an arrogant know-it-all. That's my natural personality. Not like that anymore, though. hey, come on. So I'm an arrogant know-it-all, and there's no way I'm getting down on my knees in front of whatever God I don't even believe in. Are you kidding me? So this guy, you know, he'd met people like me before, and he was like, okay, because I was complaining to him. I would call him every day, and I'd be like, you know, I just can't do it. I can't do it. So he said, okay, I want you to put all your shoes under your bed before you go to bed at night. Every shoe that you own, I want it under the bed. Can you do that? And I'm like, okay, I'll do it. So you got it. The next morning, running late for work, no shoes. So I have to go up to the bed and get down on my knees and reach in to get my shoes. And that was the first time that I prayed on my knees. And the prayer was this, please God, keep me sober today. And then at night time, the prayer was, thank you, God, for keeping me sober today. And that's really the whole basis of my prayer life, started with those two simple prayers. Please, God, keep me sober today. Thank you, God, for keeping me sober today. At the end of the day, on my knees. I didn't believe in God when I was doing that. And that's the remarkable thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the remarkable thing about whatever God is. I don't even need to believe in God in order to have an experience with God and a relationship with God. And that's pretty crazy. Because God knows what I'm like, apparently. He knows I'm an idiot. And so he gives me a lot of slack, it seems. Anyway, whatever. So, and then it talks about how people use this constantly and that it's going to take work. And it's got this nighttime meditation. The other thing I did around this time in early sobriety was I went out and got a whole bunch of books about God. I got a book called How to Pray, and I got all these books. Got myself a Bible and all this stuff. All these books on God. And now I'm going to read all about God so I understand God. That was my mission. And, you know, you would find me at maybe 4:45 in the morning, cross-legged, trying to meditate on, what's it called, the St. Francis Prayer. You know? And when I meditate on the St. Francis Prayer, I just would see all these ladies and stuff like that. I would start thinking about all that stuff. I'm supposed to be meditating and talking to God, and that's not what I'm thinking about. And it would keep coming in and coming in, and I would get really angry and frustrated with myself. And anyway, so I went through a lot of that, a lot of books, a lot of trying to do different things. The other thing is that I hadn't darkened the doorway of a church since I was maybe 13. I hated people in churches. I hated them all with a passion. One of my favourite things was maybe if I would run into somebody that said they were a Christian in a bar, oh my goodness, and just rip them to shreds and make fun of them, humiliate them. I loved that stuff. So, gradually over time, I sort of softened up on that. Maybe around about 5 years sober, I was like circling a church. And then I actually went to this course. It was called the Alpha Course or something at this church. And I didn't really become a church person. But what happened was my resentment towards people in church disappeared. And I actually felt that I knew what they were talking about and what they believed in, and they were all right. And they hadn't set out to get me. That was really just in my mind. So there was some openness there through the years. And then, you know, there was some Buddhist guys coming to talk in Glasgow in Scotland where I lived. I went to see them. I got sober in Japan, went to some beautiful temples and shrines, and just started to become more open to this idea. And to this day, I'm not a religious person. There are some people in AA that are religious. That's wonderful. This is broad. Come on in. The water's nice and warm. Just jump in. Come on. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're a hardcore Buddhist, Muslim, Christian, Jew. It doesn't matter. Atheist. Just come in. It's a big pool and the water's great. Let's get in and swim around in here and see what we can find. That's what this is about. It's broad. It's roomy. It's all inclusive. Everybody's welcome. Absolutely everybody. And that's the wonderful thing about this. I can start wherever I'm at and I can go as far as I want. I can stop. And the upshot of all this is, and we'll talk more about this later perhaps, but I sort of came full circle through the years, and now I pretty much just use the big book in the morning. I came back to that. And that's just what happened to me. That doesn't mean that needs to happen to anybody else. It's just very simple. I like the simplicity of it. So it tells me before I go to bed, and this is the one I have the most trouble with. I want to sit here and tell you that I'm perfect. And I just do everything perfectly all the time. But at night time, I'm usually really tired, and I'll trot out some excuses now about why I can't do this every day. But the bottom line is, it really benefits me when I just take a moment and thank God for keeping me sober and just say, you know, was I resentful today? And because I've learned what resentment is, going through the steps with my sponsor and I've made demands and all that stuff, I'm pretty quickly able to spot, yeah, I was resentful today. I was resentful at my neighbor again. I'm out in the yard doing the flowers and I'm thinking about how she screwed me over. And a beautiful day, playing with my beautiful flowers, and I'm thinking about how I hate my neighbour. So I can bring that to mind. And then, it asked me, was I selfish? And a day doesn't go by where there's not been some form of selfishness, usually a whole bunch of it. And was I dishonest? You know, I can think of maybe some little lies I told other people or myself. And then fear. So I can just very quickly go through that. And then there's a whole bunch of questions. And what this is really trying to do, because really it's the same as what we did in step 10. And it's really like another fail-safe. It's really trying to say, let's leave this in the day, Graham. Let's not carry it into tomorrow. There's another chance here to draw a line under the day and take a balance sheet and see. Because my tendency is to stuff all this stuff down and just go to bed. And then I get up the next day and it's still there. Especially the resentment one. It's still there, and if I've been dishonest, it'll be guilt. And the fear's there anyway. So it's asking me to really take care of business today and try to wipe the slate clean today. Do an apology and so forth. And then again, it tells me the same thing in step 10. I should be talking to somebody else about these things that are bothering me, about my selfishness, resentfulness, dishonesty, and fear. And, you know, was I kind and loving towards everyone? And think on that. You know, how did I do when I came home from work with the kids? Was I irritated by them? Was I just trying to get them to watch TV so they would leave me alone? Did I hide in the bathroom for 30 minutes when they're banging at the door? Daddy, daddy, daddy! I'm in the bathroom. You know, was I thinking of myself most of the time or whatever? And the answer's often yes. But and then it brings me right back the same as it does in step 10, and it's like, duh, I'm supposed to be thinking of other people and what I can do to help them. That's the point. And it brings me back to that again and again. And then, and I'll finish up with this, it does what it always does throughout the book. It says very simply, ask God. I love that. It says it so many times in this book. I want this to be a big complicated thing that needs all those books And, you know, wouldn't stepping 11 be nicer if I had some sort of robe on when I was doing it, you know? Maybe I could build an altar in my house. Something very, probably with me in it, right? But some sort of altar. David might have a lesser spot on the altar, but mostly me. And then maybe burn some incense, you know, and... Oh, you know, come and make a big dramatic demonstration. But that's not what this is saying at all. It's like, just ask God. God, please forgive me for my resentfulness, selfishness, dishonesty, and fear, and show me what corrective measures I should take. And it'll become apparent if I owe somebody an apology. And that's in my mind. And I have to say, since I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was one of those guys that couldn't sleep. There's always stuff running through my mind at night. This is not necessarily drunk, right? This is in between the binges. So I'm technically sober. And I'm just sitting there and it's racing through my mind, all this stuff. These people that I hate, this thing I'm going to get caught for, just thinking about it and thinking about it and thinking about it. And I couldn't get to sleep. I was tormented by those thoughts. And I have to tell you, I can honestly say to you that with some exceptions, when the heat was really on and circumstances were particularly unpleasant in sobriety, with some few exceptions, I pretty much sleep very well now. I do this or some version of this at night time. My head hits the pillow, boom, I'm fast asleep. It doesn't really bother me. And I think that's because my conscience is relatively clear. And before it wasn't. It was anything but.
Yeah, I'm the same. I came at this thing, this particular step, this prayer and meditation, I would identify as the weakest part of my program. I have, for the same reason I didn't do very well in school, I have trouble sitting still. I'm a human doing. I like being busy, I like being active, I like moving. So this idea of sitting quietly for any length of time is not natural to me. I struggle with it. I also came to Alcoholics Anonymous as a militant atheist. I mean, I really, really have no respect for agnostics. I think it's important to take a position on these things, and I took my position, and I knew where I stood, and so I had a similar sponsor. I said, well, I want you to, what's your prayer life like? Well, I don't really have one. Well, I want you to start by asking God in the morning on your knees to help you stay sober today, and I want you to thank Him at night. I'm like, well, I don't believe. And let's just say, for the sake of argument, I did believe. And if I did believe, my higher power wouldn't care if I was on my knees or not. How do you like that, Mr. Sponsor? He's like, yeah, that's fine. Just do it anyway. All right. Are you willing to go to any length, David? Yes. So I reluctantly come to this practice, and so then as I move through this thing and I start to enjoy the benefits of sobriety, I start feeling pretty good being sober. I start kind of liking the life that's unfolding in front of me, and I'm more open to praying and more open to I'm enjoying your company. I mean, you know, suddenly I'm interested in going to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not like some sort of a penance, you know. It's kind of fun. Oh, good! I'll get to see them tonight. I continue to kind of haltingly come up against this prayer and meditation. So I did the same things that Graham described. When I decided, you know, this has always been a hole in my program. I'm going to learn to meditate. So then I go and I buy books, how to meditate. And I've always been kind of attracted to Eastern philosophies and stuff. I buy the books on Buddhism and everything, and kind of see myself as a Buddhist. I'm kind of built like the Buddha, so fit into my mind's eye neatly. But I still can't sit still. And the guy that helped me out basically just made the simple declaration that, as far as he was concerned, meditation is just whatever you're thinking about. That's your meditation, whatever you're thinking about. And that got traction with me. That awakened something in me, because I started noticing what I was thinking about. And most of the time I'm thinking about my favorite subject, me, and what I'm getting, and what I'm not getting, and what I'm afraid I'm going to lose. And oh my God, where's the money going to come from? And what am I going to do? You know what she, and could you believe she even said that to me? And I just play it in my mind. So I'm constantly moving through the world, scared that it's not going to go my way, wherever I am. I'm walking into a new customer. They're not going to like me, and here's all the reasons they're not going to like me, and here's what I better do to mitigate that, and I better show up and make sure I'm friendly, and I'm just constantly thinking about myself. So this invitation, and I'm terrible at the when we retire at night. I will tell you that I have taken this language that is in the book, and I've made a one piece sheet where, and none of my language is in it, nothing like that, but on the front page is upon awakening, and it has all the list of the instructions that we're about to read, and on the other side, when we retire at night, and it has all that language there, and I printed it out on a nice thing, and I put it on a little laminated thing, and if I have this on my nightstand, then I'll pay attention to it, you know? And so I go through all, right, and I'm not going to do anything until I get the laminated piece of paper, you know? So it takes a few months to actually pull that off, you know? And then I proudly go upstairs, I have it now, you know? And that seems to last for about 2 or 3 days in a row. And I got to tell you, I don't know where that thing is right now. It's somewhere near the nightstand, under the remote, maybe, you know? But I have spent time where I get up in the morning and I read that thing. It's like, okay, if you won't take the time to do it, I make deals with myself. It sounds like manageability, doesn't it? You know, I'm going to control my experience by deliberately doing, you know. I just can't seem to pull it off. And at nighttime, I seem to grab that remote, and that's all she wrote. That's it. I don't want to hear anymore. I don't want to talk anymore. I don't want to reflect anymore. I just want to change the channel. So the nighttime piece has always been and continues to be a struggle for me. But on this thinking thing, it's inviting me to think about some other stuff. You know, as has been pointed out, have I been resentful, selfish, dishonest, afraid? Do I owe an apology? Have I kept something to myself? I content myself today to doing this with another human being every day. I try to talk to 3 alcoholics every day, and this stuff seems to come out. The current inventory comes out. I love this last line too, where it says, "But we must be careful while we're thinking about these things, like what I'm supposed to do for other people. What could have I done better? Was I kind and loving to all?" That's a great question to ask, you know. And whenever I ask it, I always come up short somewhere.
Yeah.
There's usually an apology that needs to be delivered somewhere, you know. Was I thinking of myself most of the time? Yeah, pretty much. But there's this invitation to think about somebody else. Think about what I can pack into the stream of life, and I can practice that. So, and it cautions me, David, be careful. Don't drift into worry. That's one of my favorite places, worry. Worry is I have the illusion of control if I'm worried about it. If I'm worried about it, then it's going to be fine, because I'm worried about it. It makes no sense logically, but it seems to satisfy me. So don't drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. Yeah, good, because I want to feel better. I don't want to experience those things. Oh, no, that's not the purpose of that, because that's going to diminish your usefulness to others. Bam. Once again, this exercise is not so that I feel better. This exercise is so that I can be prepared and able and response-able to be useful to other people, to be available to other people. And then again, it just asks me to pray. After making the review, ask God, what should I do? What are the corrective measures?
Let's go to page 86, on awakening. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. For after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here, we ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We're often surprised that the right answers come after we've tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. And again, I love the simplicity of this. And I just say it out loud. And I just say, God, I ask you to direct my thinking. Especially I ask you to divorce my thinking from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. And then I make a list, you know, and I suppose over the years I've tried different ways, like, you know, maybe let's make an electronic list. You know, those Palm Pilot things with that. I'll do an electronic list. And I'll set alarms on all the things to make myself do them, you know, and just all, just really trying to control things. But however I do it, it asks me to consider my plans for the day. So I'll just sit there and think, okay, what do I need to do today? And the first thing is, I need to get the kids ready for school, and they need breakfast, they need to get dressed. So I just think that overall, see what how we're doing for time, and then I'll think about work. And usually there's some fear around work, and the kind of job I do, and the type of personality I have. I get afraid a lot of the time, because I have to ask people for things, ask people to help me and stuff. So I'll think about what's going on that day. Are there any particular people I'm going to be seeing that I'm particularly afraid of? So I'll just think that through. And maybe ask for some help around that, some inspiration and guidance. And then I'll think about the evening and what I'm doing then. And then, you know, I think we all have different things we do. But there's the areas that give me the trouble would be, you know, my job, my marriage, being a parent, being an AA member. These are the sort of main roles in my life. So I try to think about, you know, what's going on with that today. And just try to think how I can carry these principles that it's talking about into those relationships and into those situations. And and then I usually have a little list at the end of it, and then I pretty much just get going. And as I say, if there's something that's particularly daunting, I'll specifically ask God about that for inspiration, a decision, an intuitive thought. And I love this bit, we relax and take it easy. I love that. And when I read that, I just seem to just take a bit of a deep breath, you know, because I get all caught up in the struggle. What really happens to me is I continually fall back into the idea that if I just do things right, I can get what I want. And things will go the way I think they should go. I continually fall back into that. And the guys that wrote this book know that. So they keep reminding me, don't do that. You're not running the show, Graham. And anyway, so I'm not going to make any claims about this being on the plane of inspiration. I'm not really sure about that. What I do know is this, as the years have gone by and I'm sober, I tend to know how to react in situations a bit better, and I'm pretty comfortable most of the time in my own skin. And for a long time that was not the case. I couldn't talk in front of people, I couldn't talk to people. It's very self-conscious. And much of that self-consciousness is gone, and I hope it never comes back. So I think that's got to do with this. And finally, you know, when I don't do this in the morning, I feel like I haven't had my breakfast or something, you know. I'm used to doing it. And it's, I think this is an important thing for me to do each morning. So I try the best I can to do it. But then life comes along. And when you've got a three-year-old kid that no matter what you do, gets up at 4:30 every morning and says, milk, and then says, I want to watch Elmo. So a lot of times when I'm doing this, it's da-da-da-da, Elmo's world, and I'm like, please God, I ask you, that's what's going on. Because that's where I live, and you know what? I don't think whatever God is demands that I'm in some temple and have silence, and that's what I'm trying to get at when I made those jokes about the ritual of all this, you know? I don't think there needs to be a big ritual. I think this is very simple. But the fact is I'm on my knees and I'm recognizing that I need some help from a power greater than me, and I'm trying to do what it says. It seems to go okay.
Yeah, I'm much better, and there seems to be a natural rhythm to the morning. I did make a promise along. You know, I would practice the third step and seven step prayers, and I would get into a routine of doing that in the morning, and then I would notice that I was running around in my life like a crazy person, and then it would sort of be a tertiary thought, well, you know, you didn't pray this morning, you know? And I was like, well, let's not let that happen again. And so I made this deal with my, I told my sponsor about it. I was like, I'm gonna hit my knees in the morning, and if something like that happens, I got small kids too. Sometimes you have a rude awakening, you know? There's bodily fluid and, you know, acrimony and, you know, craziness running around. It's like living with insane people with mobility, you know? But I just made this little deal where I would, and this is kind of where my pride has been used in my favor. I just kind of made this promise. If I ever forget, as soon as I remember, no matter what I'm doing, I'm gonna stop what I'm doing, and I'm gonna get on my knees and pray. And I did that. And I've been talking to my sponsor, who asked me, did I pray today? And I pulled over on the side of Military Highway and got down the median and hit my knees and said the third step prayer. I've been fixing that first cup of coffee in the 7-Eleven, you know, and And then you got to do a little systems check. You got to look around. Screw it. You know, I get down on my knees. You know, hope nobody's looking at me. But you do that a couple of times, and you don't forget to pray in the morning. I roll out of, no matter what's going on, I roll out of bed onto my knees. Bam.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to do it in the 7-Eleven anymore. I just don't, and I don't want to know. I don't want to experience what life is like without praying in the morning either. You know what I mean? So I'll hit my knees in the morning, I do kind of my own version of the, well, I do the third step, seventh step, kind of by rote, and then I've just got my own kind of thing that I do. You know, just use me, take me, teach me, show me, take me, I'm yours, I'm showing up for duty. Sometimes I just say reporting for duty, you know, show me what you want, you know, and then get quiet. And I seem to be able to do that before the coffee, before all the activity and the bustle of the day. And there are, not always, but there are amazing things that will occur to me in the morning, you know? And that one line, I don't know if we read it in, well, we read it after every meeting. Ask each day in your morning meditation what you can do for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. And it absolutely, it never ceases to amaze me that if I just do that. I don't do it perfectly or every day, but if I do, what can I do for the man who's still sick? And then shut up for a red hot 10 seconds. My mind just fills up, you know, oh, my mom's going in for surgery next month. She was worried about that. Why don't I give her a call today? You know, that guy picked up a white chip. I got his phone number. I could call that guy today. So-and-so's struggling with this. My son is worried about this exam and whether he's going to make this team. And suddenly my head is full of you guys and what you're struggling with and what I could do for you just by asking. And it absolutely blows me away. So if I don't make the time or cultivate the habit of asking, then it's not going to come into my mind, and I'm just going to run around the day doing what I normally do, which is thinking about myself. I do love the instruction to relax and take it easy. That's on my resume, and I got skills there. But this idea of just giving up the struggle, just giving up the fight, just even saying that makes my blood pressure lower. You know, because that's my natural condition is fight or flight. You know, am I going to get it? Am I going to obtain it? Do I have to fight for it? Do I have to run from it? I'm ready all the time. And I will invite all of you that if I ever do show up in front of any of you and say that I have been inspired by God and here's what's going on, just run away, because I've lost my mind. So I don't struggle with paying for the presumption that God told me to do this or that or the other thing. But I do have a sense of inspiration, of an intuitive thought coming to me, and I do rely on that. Grant.
Okay, we're going to go to page 87. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we'll be showing all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no request for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. And so once I've got my list and I've sat down and I've taken the time that I've got and it's time to get moving, I do this. I just say, God, please show me all through the day what my next step is to be. Please give me whatever I need to take care of problems today. I ask you especially for freedom from self-will. Help me to help other people. And, you know, going back to the idea that David was talking about, you know, meditate is to think. And I have, over the years, collected a few little pamphlets. And I think the main idea in them is really, you know, what I focus on in my mind, that's sort of a prayer. So if I'm just thinking about this one thing all the time, I'm meditating on that. If it's money or honey or whatever it is, I'm just meditating on that all the time. And so it's very important for me that that I try to switch my mind back to whatever God is. Just think about that. And this is really very practical, because what AA allows me to do most of the time is not focus on the problem. And I think that's really what this is talking about here for me, because what I'll do is I'll start thinking, well, I need to do this, and I need to say this to this guy so I can get this, and I need this money, and blah, 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 blah. And really what I'm doing by thinking about all that stuff is I'm really asking for that stuff. I'm saying, this is what I want, this is what I need. And what I've come to understand is that that's really the antithesis of what I'm trying to do in AA. What AA really keeps doing is, and this happens when I phone those guys up, the closed-mouthed friends that I've got in AA, and tell them what's really going on behind the curtain. When I tell them what's really going on in my whole life, rather than the one I want everybody to see. And when I tell it to those guys, you know what they do? They listen, and then they redirect me. And that is so key. I need to be redirected. Because left to my own devices, I just spin up in my head about me, 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 me. And like he said, it's my expert subject. Graham Rutherford and how he feels. Let's go. I don't feel right today. There's something wrong. I need more money. You know, or whatever. And so it's very important for me that I try the best I can, however I can, whether it's by talking to other people or whether it's by consciously doing it in the morning and through the day, trying to turn my thoughts away from me and try to think instead about these other things, try to think about God, try to think about somebody that I can help. Who can I call? You know, I'm feeling afraid. Can I call somebody and ask them how they're doing? And so I think for me to sit around and think about me, you know, you could argue that that's me praying about myself. You know, I don't think a prayer has to be like this on my knees saying God. I think just by thinking over and over again in my head about things, that is a form of prayer. It's a form of meditation. And it's a complete waste of time. And it doesn't work. It hasn't ever worked. It's never brought me the things that I think I need. And then, like, I lose a job and I'm like, why is this happening to me? And then it turns out 5 years later that was the best thing that ever happened. So when I start to get situations like that happening, I start to realize more and more that I don't really even know what it is that's good for me. The so-called good and the so-called bad. Something happens and I'll say, look, guys, this is bad. And you'll be like, yeah, that's bad. But then 5 years later, it turns out it was the thing that defined my life and changed my whole life for the better. Okay, so maybe it wasn't bad.
Yeah, I was just taught very specifically, you just don't pray for yourself. David, you just don't pray for yourself. You know, God's not Santa Claus, David. You know, we're not a greedy child showing up, giving him a list of what I want. And it was that same guy who pointed out that I don't really know what's good for me anyway, so what the hell do I know about what I want anyway? I got a friend of mine who says, when you're thinking about the problem, think about God. And I have another friend who says that throughout the day, it's just a series of surrenders, just a series of surrenders, and that has traction with me. I've got employment difficulties like a lot of people. I got money difficulties like a lot of people. I got a house that I'm worried about losing, and it's in various stages of loan modification. So the government's going to help me with that, and that's a lot of fun. So I worry about this stuff. I'm worried about the house. I'm worried I'm going to lose the house. And And when I think about the problem, and then I think about God, and then I think about surrender, it's your house, Father. This becomes my thought. This is your house. If you want me to continue in this house, then show me what you want me to do. You know, if you want it for some of your other kids, take it, you know. And so I just give it up. Give it up in that moment. But then I've still got a day in front of me. Now, would it be appropriate for me to go to work and try to earn some money? Maybe. You know, would it be appropriate to pay the bill? Maybe, you know. But this is the day. We're back, you know, and Graham brought it up, but back into the day, you know. Because I will burn, it's like worry works, right? You know, worry gives me the illusion that I'm taking care of the problem when really I'm just recycling a lot of neurotic sort of fear. You know, when really there might be an appropriate action that needs to be taken. But I can't seem to get there from the worry. There has to be this recognition that I'm not qualified to run my life. I'm powerless over alcohol. My life is unmanageable by me. Something other than me is going to restore me to sanity. Father, why don't you take my will? Why don't you take my life? You take this house. Take the family. Take it. Take my children. Take the car. Show me what you want. I'm a custodian of these things today. And if you, with your help, I will take care of those things today. But I don't own any of it. So when I can get there, I seem to be awake to what's going on around me. And I seem to be able to be effective in what's going on around me.
Okay, we're going to continue on page 87. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we've been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. And my wife and I have at times prayed together consistently. It's usually when things are really bad. I wish I could say it wasn't just like that, but you know, let's be honest. When things are going great, I don't really have such a need for God. Because I'm doing all right. What do I need God for? I'm doing fine. But when my ass is on fire, so when the relationship's not panning out the way I think it should, when the money's not, and that's the two things, it's the relationship or the lack of a relationship and the money. That's the two things that stand out, that really grab my attention when they're not going the way I think they should. And then it's like, okay, we need to get the big guns in. Come on, God, let's sort this out. Come on, God. Come on down here. Let's sort her out right now. Okay, shower me with money. I'm ready. I'll be good now. You know, trying to do bargains with the big man or whatever it is. So, but those times when we have prayed together like that consistently, I have to tell you, it really brings the relationship a new dimension. And as I've told you, I wouldn't describe myself as a religious person. I do have this great book right now, which I read just one little paragraph from each day, and it usually sets me up with a great idea for the day. Sometimes I'll talk to my friend, AA friends about it, and it's just something, you know, it's, some days it doesn't inspire me, some days it does. So it's just emphasizing the principles. And then, who would have known it, but religious people apparently were right, which means that I was wrong. And it says, make use of what they offer. And this is the crazy thing, because when I got over my big resentment against organized religion, and actually went, and this program I went to, it's like a 12-week program, and you have dinner with them, and they talk about stuff out of the Bible, and they're all really nice. When I went and did that, I realized, these people are just sort of trying to do the same thing as we're doing in AA. But they didn't have to destroy their whole life and hurt everybody in order to realize that that was a desirable thing to do. They just want to do that because they want to be nice. They want to be better people. So I'm doing it because my ass is on the line. You know what I mean? And I'm uncomfortable. So that was a real revelation for me. And it helped me a great deal to see, you know, we really don't have a monopoly on this. These are a lot of ideas that were brought in to help people like me.
That's true. When there's a calamity on, when there's something, when it's falling apart, I'm almost in constant conscious contact. My prayer life is just dialed in, and me and God are just riding together all the time. But when prosperity's on, I got some other stuff to do. So I love where it says, if we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also, in addition to, not instead of. I like that. Mm-hmm. And then the other sentences basically just reinforce that idea to me that we're not trying to, we're just making some suggestions here, David. We're not trying to say that this is a contract or that we have the only path to prayer and meditation. It's okay. But that statement, be quick to see where religious people are right, period. That absolutely saved my life. And not because I've had some sort of denominational religious experience, but I just, in that moment, I realized how I've spent my entire life pointing out where religious people were wrong. And that's my default mode. Yeah, but they do this. Look at the burnings and the chicanery and the wars and the murder and the in the name of and all that. I mean, that's me on a bar stool for 15 years talking that stuff. Be quick to see where religious people are wrong, you know, and how it's not for me, not for a smart guy like me, you know. But then when I look to see where they're right, I notice that those people are banging nails and roofs for people that have houses to live in, and they're up early in the morning making food for people. I intend to do those things. I don't actually get it done, but I respect. You know what I mean? It's like so when I'm quick to see where they're right and resign from the debating society and stop arguing, stop thinking I know what's best, and just kind of accept what's going on. And this whole thing is set up that way. It gives me a path. I get to choose the higher power of my own understanding. I get to pray to whomever I wish to pray. And those are the conditions that I can meet. I can rise to those. I get to decide. Yay, I'm in charge again. But just a simple statement of be quick to see where they're right and make use of what they offer. Make utility of, put into action, practice what they offer. Beautiful invitation. Thanks.
Okay, we're going to read another paragraph on page 87. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. And, you know, we've talked in here before about the pause. I think the pause comes more than it did before, definitely. But I never used to have a pause. You know, and someone told me agitated and doubtful is angry and afraid. You know, and I come across that stuff during the day. And I get the chance to pause. And hopefully, like it said in step 10, maybe think, you know, I should maybe call somebody. Don't call that guy, and I get the chance to pause and have a better outcome than before. And I have to tell you, you know, last week I talked about how terrible it was. I was getting a new car, and the new car guy hadn't called me back fast enough, and I was going to call him up and let him have it on the phone. And I didn't do that, and, you know, I went to pick it up, and it was wonderful, a big smile on his face. I smiled and shook his hand. We were best buds. And I was in and out of there in 5 minutes, you know, and the guy was really happy to see me. It was a really positive experience. Now imagine if I'd done what my initial reaction was, which was to call him up and give him 10 minutes on the phone about how he's a loser and he doesn't know who he's dealing with, and then get his manager and tell the manager the same thing, and you people don't know how to run a business, and I'm, you know, big deal is on the phone and you need to recognize that. Can you imagine going in then to pick the car up? Because I've done that before, and let me tell you, it's uncomfortable walking down like that thinking, or maybe calling up to see when that guy's not going to be there. Can I pick it up then? That's the way I lived my life. So the pause comes sometimes, and just going back to the old idea, I'm not running the show, and that's a good thing, because look what happened when I ran the show. I ended up in AA. That's how successful it was. I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous with all the bottom feeders. Here we are, munching on the sludge. So, you know, we're down here. And there's nowhere else to go. So, you know, here we are, what are we going to do? And this idea, like David was saying, you know, your will be done, God. Your will be done. And it lists off, you know, my default excitement, you know, fear, anger, worry, self-pity. This is my default situation. And I spend less time than before there. And hopefully, I still go there, but hopefully when I do, I'm able to articulate it to another man in AA and he's able to redirect me. Hold on a minute. You know, where were you wrong? Where were you to blame? Let's get back on to the day and how we can help somebody else. And I have to tell you, I used to not be able to face a whole day sober when I first got sober. I would work, I would come home, I would pass out at 4 o'clock, I would sleep till 6, 6.30, I would eat 2 sleeves of Chips Ahoy and drink a bottle of soda and then go out to a meeting. I couldn't take a whole day awake. It was just too much. It was exhausting. And then, you know, I'm not saying I don't get tired anymore, but I'm really able to cope with the day, whatever it brings, a family, a job, and all these other things coming to AA. And I forgot to read the last, it says it works, it really does. I forgot to read that bit, and this really does work. And if this is the wonderful thing about AA, which I never really found at the church or in the temple or wherever it was I was going. In AA, I can see that it works because I'm surrounded by people in whom it's working. And they're telling me that this is what they're doing. They're not drinking and their lives are getting better typically, or they're able to cope with life without drinking and without being a lunatic. And that shows me that this really works.
Yeah, I don't think that my imperfect ability to pause is through any sort of spiritual development on my part. I have experienced the pain of not pausing so many times in my life and been on the wrong end of, after absolutely twisting off at you and handing your hat, and then I let you get a word in edgewise, I find out that my entire premise was flawed to begin with. Oh, you meant Tuesday, you know. Well, that makes sense, you know. Sorry about that. I don't know what I was thinking, you know what I mean? I've just been on the wrong end of that so many times where I'm just more willing now to go, wait a minute, I need to ask a clarifying question. Do you mean Tuesday? Yeah. Oh, good, because Thursday would be crazy. But this idea of constantly reminding myself that I'm no longer running the show, you know, we're back, we keep seeing it over and over again, back to that simple keystone idea that he is the father and I'm the child, he's the principal, I'm the agent, we're in the world to play the role that he assigns. And that's the invitation to try. I don't know how everything that gets done in a day gets done in a day, but it seems to get done. I absolutely am amazed at all the things that actually get accomplished.
Okay, and we're just going to finish up with these last 4 or 5 lines on page 88. It says, we alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we've just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. And I'm a very undisciplined person. I always have been. Lack consistency. I'm a great starter, a terrible finisher. You know, kill the interview, suck at the job. That's the sort of person I am. I've always been like that. And it's very difficult to this day for me to be consistent. That is the greatest challenge. To do what I said I would do when I said I would do it. To be where I said I would be when I said I would be there is still difficult. Today it's been difficult. This day. So I'm trying to live this one day at a life program that's laid out here and get some help to discipline me in a simple way. And it has improved. And then I love this bit. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. And really, you know, sitting around praying and meditating, it's great. It's part of the program. It's step 11. But we're coming to our favorite part of the steps. All of this, including this part here, step 11 that we talked tonight, this was just a preparation to get me ready for the work that's going to save my life. And the work that's going to save my life and what I'm getting prepared to do is to help other people, especially other alcoholics. And this has all been to put me in the position where I can do that as effectively as possible. And we're going to be talking about that for the next 2 weeks.
Thank you. That's our time. I'm going to pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential. At every level of AA service, it is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any announcements tonight for the good of AA?
Jason, I'll call up.
Joe, Jason.
12th anniversary of the people meeting. Sunday, January 13th. This is your extravaganza. Starts at 6. Still an open meeting. So.
What night?
Sunday, January 13th.
On the next quiz.
Thank you, Jason.
Any other announcements?
And then the following night after that one, on January the 14th, which is a Monday, we are having supper and a speaker, and we've got a guy coming in from Ocean City, and the food is at 6 o'clock and the speaker's at 7. Everybody's welcome.
There's a bunch of flyers out by the coffee. Feel free to take some back to your home groups as well on that event. Any other AA-related announcements? Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see